Hello, it's Mitch Hagin. I'm so honored to have as our guest today the incredible historian Eva Kord, who is a well-known Holocaust survivor and runs the Kendall's Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Terre Haute, Indiana, and is famous for forgiving the Nazis. We'll get to that in the standpoint of forgiveness. And also Dr. Robert Enright, who is the co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute, travels all over the world using forgiveness therapy. It's an honor to have you both on the show.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I didn't know that there was an institute for forgiveness.
Yes. Well, and Dr. Enright, welcome to the show for you as well.
Thank you, and it's an honor to meet you, Eva. I play your video with regard to all you have been through in my doctoral seminar and my undergraduate classes, and everyone is so impressed with who you are as a person.
So you think I am a good case study?
Oh, you're more than that. You're an amazing case study.
Well,
thank you.
So much ground to cover in a short time. But first, Eva, your story, and Dr. Enright mentioned your video where you actually go back and you do sort of an amnesty for the Nazis, and you meet with a doctor who worked on the staff where you were the victim of human experimentation under the direction of Dr. Mengele at Auschwitz. So tell me about that process.
Well, that happened in 1993. It was a very strange occurrence because my sister just died on June 6, 1993, and I was mourning her death. And unrelated to that, I received a telephone call from a professor at Boston College, Dr. John Michalczyk, and he said to me, Eva, I have heard you speak. I want you to come to Boston. I agreed. And he said, when you come to Boston, it would be nice if you could bring with you a Nazi doctor. At that point, I started joking. I said, and where exactly do you think I can find one of those guys? They are not advertising in the telephone book. So he said, oh, you like to joke, but I want you to think seriously. And next day I remembered that actually I had encountered in a film that I appeared with the other Mengele twins, which was done by a German television, and they aired it in 1992, and this was 1993. So I figured there was a Nazi doctor by the name of Hans Munch that was Mengele's friend. He was not my doctor, and so I got a hold of his telephone number and contacted him and invited him to go with me to Boston, at which time he said he was not willing to go with me to Boston, but he was willing to meet with me at his house. So that is the way we got acquainted. What was interesting is, number one, he gave me a very good interview. Number two, he made me feel very much at ease. So I felt free to ask him any questions. And I asked him about the gas chamber. And when he responded to that, yes, he was aware of the gas chamber. He was stationed outside. And when everybody was dead, he would sign the death certificate. I have never heard about anything like that. And then I invited him to go with me to Auschwitz for the 1995 anniversary to the liberation of the camp. And he immediately agreed. And that is the way that when he was going to give me a document documenting the operation of the gas chamber, I wanted to give him a gift of a gesture of my thanks. And I really, really had to think very hard every day. I brainstormed every day for 10 months when I came up with the idea that I could give him a letter of forgiveness from an Auschwitz survivor to a Nazi doctor from Auschwitz. I thought that that was meaningful, and that is the way that happened.
And before we go to Dr. interested in this. What did that act of forgiveness do for you, Eva?
Well, the moment when I realized that I have power over my life, because all victims are angry or hurt, feel helpless, feel hopeless, and definitely powerless. The realization that I had power to change my future, not my past, only my future, by forgiving, that made me feel very good. And that was really what I concentrated on. And this is what I tell everybody that I lecture about forgiveness. Unfortunately, we cannot change the past. But each person has the power to change their own future.
Very powerful indeed. Dr. Enright, it sounds like what you've been preaching all over the world.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I think Eva Moses Kaur is the epitome of what a human being can accomplish at the very highest levels of development. And I know you're a very humble person, Eva, but I also think you truly are a model of humanity. And you know what I've also found? Models of humanity can be very controversial because many people don't understand this very high level of development of giving of oneself to those who never have given to you. And so clearly, I'm sure you have gone through much controversy
with this. And still go through controversy. Yes.
And see, I admire you for standing strong in that controversy. And Mitch, you just asked Eva about, you know, what this did for her, and she said it gave her power over her life. And I want to point out to the listeners that in Eva's documentary, it's entitled Forgiving Dr. Mengele, there's a point there where she's working out in the gym. And that's, to me, highly significant if you think about it. She's not hiding under the bed. She's not using all the tragedy in a bad way. You can see the thriving in her. And it's not just the exercise, she's doing it with gusto. How many people who could survive Auschwitz the way she did, losing her sister Miriam to kidney disease because of what Dr. Mengele did, and she's actually in the gym thriving in her elderly years. I am so impressed with that, because it shows what can be accomplished when you don't let your tragedies destroy you.
It's an amazing act of forgiveness when the rest of us have such petty concerns that we struggle with. You're a beacon for forgiveness. Eva, I would ask both of you, and start with Eva, because I know you both care about the Middle East and what's happening with the Israelis and Palestinians and the conflict. We recently had the announcement that the American embassy would move to Jerusalem, the ancient capital, and yet there's all this unrest, and there are denunciations from many different governments, and there's hatred that goes for centuries. So how do you bring forgiveness into that kind of current event?
That is a million-dollar question. However, I would like to point out that today is the first day of Hanukkah.
Yes, happy Hanukkah, by the way.
Thank you. But what I want to point out, that as far as 220 years ago, there was an event in Jerusalem, at the temple in Jerusalem, where they found enough oil, the Maccabees found enough oil to light one candle for one night. The miracle was that the oil lasted for 8 days until they could bring more oil. That didn't happen in any other place except Jerusalem. So what are we, when we talk about today's controversies, this is the heart and soul of the Jewish people. And in that respect, I am very optimistic that we can still make peace with the Palestinians. And there are groups of people who are trying. The politics is very nasty. It's always been very nasty. The Jews are not going to turn around and die easily as they did in the Holocaust. Those survivors of the Holocaust are fighting for every right to live and live free in a land that they have already lived as Jews for thousands of years. So it wasn't an Arab who went to found the oil in a temple in Jerusalem, Muslim. It wasn't even Christians. None of these religions existed. We have to really pay attention to that. And I hope with all my heart that some smart people will find a way to bring the two sides together, because the idea of moving the embassy to Jerusalem wasn't invented by the current president. It has been uttered and promised by many other presidents. And the Jews would like it that way, but I think that there is a price. I believe, and I'm trying to do something about it, I'm not sure how successful I'll be, that Jewish mothers and Palestinian mothers should form an organization for peace, because they are the mothers who bring children to the world, and they are the mothers who bury their children when they are killed. Politicians are not that good at that.
No. Great idea. What do you think, Dr. Enright?
Well, I'm really glad both of you brought this up, because I'm on my way to Jerusalem, and I am having a very important meeting with the Peace Institute on January 10th. It's the Elijah Interfaith Institute, and the head of education there is Pita Pelich. And we're meeting with the Jerusalem Department of Education. And I'm wondering what you think of the following, Eva, once I describe this. I am thinking about peace in the Middle East, as you are, and my focus is the children. Mahatma Gandhi said, if we want true peace in the world, if we are to make war against war, then we must begin with the children. And I've been doing forgiveness education all over the world since 2002. We're in Liberia, Africa, for example, and Belfast, Northern Ireland. We're in Galilee in a Palestinian area with Muslim Christians together, which is quite rare in Israel. We're in Saudi Arabia. We're in three major cities in Iran. And it's hard to break in to Jerusalem with forgiveness education because people are skeptical about it. And you have experienced the skepticism, Eva, as I have, where people will say, well, if I forgive, that means I'm giving in to the other side. If I forgive, that means I'm giving up my own values. I'm giving up who I am as a person. No, you know that when people learn to forgive, they get rid of the poison within them that could kill them.
Right.
And the reason I start with the children is so that they can developmentally learn what forgiveness is, which is to see the inherent worth in others even when they behave badly, so that when they're adults, they can make decisions not based on hatred. I need your help for this January 10th meeting to convince people who are misunderstanding forgiveness the need to plant forgiveness in the schools of Jerusalem. And without your vision, without your wisdom, I don't know that I'm going to succeed. I need to talk with you about somehow you having a recorded message that we can play for the educators in Jerusalem so that we can begin building the hearts of the children. So that 20
I have been wondering about that, because I tweet a lot, and I was tweeting the other day, and watching some kind of a news item where people were very angry, lots of young people and protesting, and I thought, if somehow I could harvest all that anger and turn it into loving, care, understanding, peaceful interaction, wow, we could solve all the problem of the world.
That's right. I still
haven't found it. But I thought maybe I will do a project in 2018 where I will ask somebody to drive me into a crowd where there is a lot of protest and anger, and I will maybe with a microphone I can reach them and say, what do you want to accomplish? Besides hating the other person, do you have a goal? If the other side would come to you and say, I am your friend, I forgive you, you would still punch them in the face or hit them or try to kill them? I don't know. There is that big, big upheaval. But I think we grown-ups act that way.
Indeed,
against
we do.
One administration, one political party, or another one. We have to turn all that anger into something better. Because that all that anger is not solving anybody's problems.
You're so right. And that's why we begin with stories, children's stories, so we don't start with the hot-button issues of the day.
The hot-button issues of today are very hot.
Yeah, and so the people don't necessarily think clearly in an educational context when you're using the hot buttons. But if we use children's stories and show children how people
you mean to write children's stories where children of diverse backgrounds meet and get along?
That's exactly right. And even when they see teddy bears and elephants in stories who have conflicts and then somehow work through them in a peaceful, merciful, compassionate way, children can learn from that, so then they can apply it on the playground, in the family. You see, they build what I call their forgiveness muscle, so that by the time they're adults, they get it. But we have to start with the children, with these kind of children's stories, so that they can, in the quiet of the classroom, apart from conflict, learn what forgiveness is, what it is not, and apply it grow little by little. That, I think, could change the world. And you have that vision, and I have all of the curriculum guides from pre-kindergarten through grade 12, and we, of course, enculturate them in different areas of the world. The stories in Athens, Greece, are different from those in Saudi Arabia, which are different from those in Madison, Wisconsin, where I am. And we have to enculturate it into Jerusalem, and I need your help to get that done.
Get my telephone number, and we should off the air a little bit more, then, because I have been thinking about the same thing. Yes, people are different. Yes, people have wronged me. Yes, they have said a lot of things. Now what?
Exactly.
Now what is a great question. Let me ask you, though, because people have heartfelt grievances and passions, and how does one draw the line between forgiveness and appeasement? Because I don't know that people are willing to appease those they oppose in some sort of meaningful, tangible way, but yet I think you still are advocating forgiveness short of that. How does that work, that balance?
First of all, appeasement, I did not want to appease anybody. I discovered, as I was looking for a gift, which was strange, really, I wanted in some form or shape to thank this Nazi doctor for his willingness to come and document the gas chamber, because so many revisionists say it didn't happen. And there he was, so willing to talk to me. And he, when he was willing to come to Auschwitz with me in 1995, I thought it would be nice if I could thank him in some fashion. And how on earth do you thank a Nazi doctor? And how crazy an idea that is. So I knew that my friends and family would not understand it. And if I told them, they might talk me out of it. So I didn't. I didn't tell them. There was no appeasement. All I wanted to do is find a meaningful gift from me, the survivor, to a Nazi doctor. But when I found the gift to give him, I discovered the greatest gift to myself, liberation from my past, emotional freedom from what happened. And that there is nothing to appease. I wasn't appeasing him. I wasn't trying to get him to do anything for me. He was willing to do it already. He was willing to sign the document that he knew what was happening because he was part of it. It was just my effort to give him a gift, a meaningful gift, that I came up with the idea of a letter of forgiveness. And once I discovered that, I discovered that I have power over my life, over my future, how I relate to the things that happened to me. The tragedy of all tragedies is that, unfortunately, no one can change the past. We have to be able to rise above it, forgive, so we heal ourselves and we can. I would like to say that I say, and I wish that United Nations is coming up. It was December 10th, 2 days ago, or 3 days ago. It was 69 years to the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And I have approached United Nations 7 years ago to include in that Universal Declaration that every human being has the human right to be free of the pain inflicted upon us by life or by other people, and that is possible through forgiveness, and that is a voluntary act. Everybody has to do it for themselves. But to realize that I have the human right to be happy, and I do, and to be free of all the evil that was done to me.
It's a powerful statement. Dr. Unruh, when it comes to that, applying it to, say, a conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis, wouldn't you then...
Maybe I should write a new declaration, my own declaration, as an addendum to the Declaration of Human Rights.
That's a great idea. What I'm saying is, then, do you take then the step of forgiveness toward rooting out violence so that people, when they have differences, they can debate or discuss them peacefully? Because right now we're a long way from that.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yes, but to say to a victim who feels offended and angry that you have the human right to be happy and to be free from all that, I wonder how do they relate to that.
If you notice in what Eva's saying, Mitch, you asked about appeasement. And one thing she showed very clearly in what she has just finished saying is that forgiveness and justice exist side by side in two ways. First, when she forgave Dr. Munch, she had him sign a document that was very important where he admitted that the Holocaust happened and the horrors happened. And as you know, there are revisionists trying to make the outrageous claim that the Holocaust never happened. To sign such a document is a justice issue. So as she forgave and as he accepted that, he entered into the world of justice, and saying it is fair to say the Holocaust and its horrors happened. Also notice that in Eva's energy to forgive, she's also now talking about human rights. Rights are justice issues, not forgiveness and mercy issues. Eva is moving toward the idea of adding into the Declaration of Human Rights at the United Nations this theme that we all have a right to be happy, including the other person, including those who are in conflict with me. Forgiveness and justice so often grow up together, and people miss that, and that's why they call it appeasement. And when we realize that they both grow up together, and you've heard it very clearly today in what Eva has said, she has laid that out beautifully.
Then how do you get people who are at loggerheads to apply those principles when they don't lose their political position in the process?
I don't know if they lose their political position. The question also that I always ask people when the survivors who yell at me and the people who want me to pursue justice, and I said, you have to ask yourself, do I deserve to live in my life without the baggage and the pain that somebody imposed upon me? Can I live free of that baggage? And if the answer is right, correct, then how on earth will I accomplish that? Because those people who are very affected by the baggage of the past, they don't think that they have any choice, but they have to live that way. So they have to ask themselves the question, do I have the right? And let's see what the answer is. I say that today, I was just in Israel about 6 weeks ago, and interestingly, what has happened, a video of mine was posted by BuzzFeed, and I can tell you it has reached 178 million this morning of views, and it's still growing at about 400,000 a day. And why? Because the world is hungering for a solution to pain and anger, and they can view it on their computer in their home, but they want to hear it. So the Israelis, the survivors are not very much in favor of that, but their children and grandchildren love it. So maybe, as you talked about the children and grandchildren, we should somehow tailor the solution toward that age.
Yes, indeed, because they're open to it, and then when they develop into adulthood, they will have a qualitatively different way of approaching the peace process that might not even be envisioned today. We have to give them the tools of forgiveness and then turn them loose and see what kind of world they create. I agree with you, Eva, 100%.
I want to share something. I have this museum here, and people bring all kind of students to the museum. I think it was about 2 months ago that it was on a Saturday, and I had a packed house, and I was curious where all these people were coming from, and I asked them to volunteer the places. One said, I am from India, I am from Pakistan, I am from the Soviet Union, I am from Palestine. I said, where on earth are you coming out from? So the teacher volunteered to tell me that she has a group of different students from 10 countries, 10 troubled countries, and it's a project of the State Department to bring them here to United States, into the middle of America, to in peaceful environment, and they find foster care for them or hosting families to teach them how democracy works. And I don't know if anybody has talked about it, but it would be interesting. And I have not called the State Department, but I am curious myself. That is an excellent idea.
It really is. You have a lot of great ideas. it sounds like the next step then from a practical perspective on the ground where there is conflict is to simply encourage compromise or to acknowledge the other side exists. And how
that
does
is the number one compromise, correct. Yes, you have the right to live too in peace.
Right. And so if we don't recognize the other as rights, then we're nowhere. We're not to first base. So isn't that step one? And then it would take courageous people to put a hand of peace on the table.
Yeah, well, you know, I personally am working on trying, but I haven't gone very far with it. I really would like to open a forgiveness garden, but I was hoping for to put in a plant arrangement in a peaceful setting with chairs and then posters that acknowledge the people's struggle with it. And maybe through an hour or two of these things, and also have an area for contemplation, that at the end of the trail of that forgiveness garden, I would have paper and pen, and if they are ready to forgive, write their own letter of forgiveness or take it home. Because so many people who feel like they are stuck and they cannot beyond the pointing the finger at the other side, you did this to me, and therefore I cannot forgive you. In every walk of life, I have seen that. Some even want to, but they think they can't. And I didn't know, and I don't know if it will work, but I would like to try it.
I think it's a wonderful idea. Doctor, I can't imagine a better spokesperson for your life's work than Eva Kaur. I mean, it's an amazing thing.
I agree with you 100%, Mitch, because Eva has a lived experience that's very genuine. It's heartfelt and compassionate. It's very wise. And people need to hear that. And it's jarring for people. Eva knows that because she's lived that. And so have I, in trying to simply bring the idea of forgiveness into the social sciences at the University of Wisconsin, where I'm a professor. Eva, I've had to go through a lot, not nearly as momentous as you have, but just to bring the idea for study of the topic of forgiveness into the universities throughout the world has been a battle for me.
And yeah, they wouldn't want it.
They don't want it. And so you are someone who can show people a different way, a different voice. And the fact that you and I are united in the idea of working with the young to give them a chance, not to force them now, but to give them a chance to explore this idea of forgiveness could change the world.
And Absolutely.
I give this kind of a multiple choice test to people. I say, if you were in an alternative universe and you could only teach either mathematics or forgiveness to children and adolescents, which would you choose and why? And I always say, I would choose forgiveness, because when you've been hurt terribly by life, that could kill you. Not being able to balance your checkbook will never kill you. And so I ask, why is it, if education is to prepare people for adulthood, why do we not prepare them for the injustices that could destroy individuals, families, and communities? I consider it a tragedy,
actually,
that we don't teach
that
forgiveness
as a tool. We leave religious education, and not all religions believe in it, and then we put it aside because it's religious belief.
Well, see, that's, I think, a mistake by people who reject it, because it's actually a moral virtue, like patience, kindness, justice. And justice has made its way from the Torah, as you know,
to
secular societies. Even in universities, we have entire departments dedicated to the virtue of justice, and we call them law schools. And so what I've done is bring the virtue of forgiveness into mainstream social science research, And we can bring it in the schools. Why not bring it in the schools?
I think it should be a subject to be studied. And I just very proud to tell you that two professors in Israel invited me last January 2016, to lecture about forgiveness. They designed a course, and they have written a paper about my presentation, 35 pages, to admit it to the scientific panel to be accepted as a studying, as a subject that should be studied and taught.
Well, see, I am meeting 1 year to the day where you were last year. You said January 10th. You were in Israel. That's where I will be. I'm going to be in Jerusalem January 10th talking to educators, and maybe we need to bring those two professors in on this conversation, because if they see this need in Israel, their voice and your voice may be able to convince some people to move forward.
Yeah, I agree, and there is so much work to be done, and it's really not as complicated as people think. Once you let yourself go, that you don't have to punch somebody because they have hurt you, and the punching of somebody will not release you or make you feel whole or make you feel happy.
Right.
And I have even a little book I have written, and maybe it should be a lot more popular than it is. It's called Little Eva and Miriam in First Grade. And this is when I was six, and I was called Dirty Jew, and I was punished by the teacher. At the end of the book, it's a simple book, my first experience with hatred in first grade, with illustration. And at the end, it has questions, which we really should put to young children and give them the permission to ask them, to understand why their unfairness. Why, and the questions are simple. Has anybody hurt you? For age 6, 7, 8, how did it make you feel? Have you hurt anybody? How did it make you feel when you hit them back? That is a book that I think is very apropos teaching at that age. Hurting somebody back should not be a glorious event. Punching another kid because they punched them should not make a child feel good.
Well said. I know you agree, Doctor. These principles are very soothing for the host, as I'm realizing my problems are small compared to Eva Kaur, and yet it can apply these principles in my own life, and everyone can, to their great advantage.
I agree. See, I usually say forgiveness is a very simple but untried solution to conflict, and it's a very simple curricular addition that simply has never been considered. It's not that
hard.
Could
you and I go to United Nations and ask them to listen to our ideas?
Well,
they're
supposed
to be the...
Okay, well, here you go, Eva. Here's an invitation right on the air on Mitch's show. I am actually organizing a conference at the United Nations on April 23rd of next year, called the New York Conference on Forgiveness, and I would
They kicked out my film. They didn't want to show it.
I would like you to come with me and give a talk there. I'm giving a talk on forgiveness education, and we hope to bring in...
What date is that?
April 23. It's a Monday, and we're bringing in educators from Youngstown, Ohio, which had the distinction of being the number two poorest city in the nation in 2011. And they've started a forgiveness education program in their trauma-informed school, in their juvenile delinquency center, and in a rural school for challenged youth. And they have begun forgiveness education on the community level there, and they're going to be talking at the United Nations, as I am. And I would like you to talk about forgiveness education as a possibility based on your experience. And so
absolutely, because it's not taught. The kid doesn't know it even exists.
Right. So I've invited you on the air. Let's go for it, as they say. Come on. Let's see what we can do.
Well,
United Nations,
more information
New York City.
Of the air.
Well,
I need your telephone number and so I could communicate with you or email or something.
We'll make sure that happens, obviously. We'll get it to you. That's fantastic. I feel like Frank Sinatra getting Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin back together after 20 years, only this is much more important.
Well, can you imagine this film that you talk about? My son sent them a copy, and then they decided to show it in 2009. It was the day that Obama was inaugurated, and I was in New York. I was going to I was at home to be in New York for the 27th. Of January, which is Holocaust Observance Day, and on January 9th, they called me to tell me that somebody among the survivors didn't like it, and therefore they kick it out. I had 100 friends across the United States coming to see it in New York at United Nations, so I had to wait outside with the producer to greet those people who we couldn't reach. And there were about 50 who arrived there. The rest, I rented a room by nearby Holiday Inn, and we showed the film there. And when I asked why on earth did they kick it out, because one survivor, and they hinted to Elie Wiesel, I don't know if that's the case or not, but he said that he didn't like it, and therefore they had to kick it out.
Sometimes it only takes one, doesn't it?
To disagree, and they are going to really... It was United Nations that's involved in peace. How come they don't want to see a video that promotes peace?
It's a good question. There are a lot of questions like that in the world right now. How come people can't sit down?
That is, we have to really maybe concentrate on those who have the power to make a difference, and United Nations should definitely advocate peace.
Yes, it's a hard sell. It all depends on what's in the mind and heart of the leaders we approach. We can approach someone who totally gets it, like in Youngstown, Ohio, then another who will say, justice first, justice alone, don't talk with me about forgiveness. And I, like you, Eva, run up against both of these kinds of hearts, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to move forward. I understand why someone would say, get out of here. It's because in all likelihood, they've been wounded in the past. They have not worked through this, and they don't want to hear anything like forgiveness because it does sound like appeasement. It sounds phony. It sounds too soft and threatening. And it's sad because they haven't had good forgiveness education, and they're not going after forgiveness. They're going after a false view of it. But then you end up not sharing your message, and that's a damage done. Because people who then could hear your message are blocked from it. And that's why we need forgiveness education, so people who've been wounded can at least understand what it is and then reject it.
Have the choice to decide if they want to do it or not.
Right. Once they find, but they have to understand what it is. So many people who reject forgiveness have a misunderstanding of what it is. And so they're actually going against appeasement, or saying I must reconcile and be heard again, or what I'm doing is simply pardoning another or condoning or excusing what they've done. No one would ever want to excuse the Holocaust, but if someone thinks that's what forgiveness is, they will battle you, but they're battling you for all the wrong reasons.
Well, what I think in the case of the Holocaust, I am a survivor, and wherever it comes to Israel's right to exist, or any nation's right to exist, particularly the Asmar, I am always there. But I am battling the survivors of the Holocaust who are in their 80s and 90s. And can you imagine that they are still victims 70-some years later? That is tragic.
I agree. And if they would stop and think that those who perpetrated the Holocaust are now winning twice, first with the imprisonment, and now the long-term resentment that is living in the heart. That's the second win. And I would ask the question, why would we want them to win twice? But again,
I'll give you an interesting example. I didn't understand many of the things. I was too young as a child, but 4 or 5 years ago, I was in Washington, D.C. for the 20th anniversary to the opening of the U.S. Holocaust Museum, and one of the scholars came up to me, gave me a hug and a kiss. So I knew him, but I wasn't that good a friend with him. And I said, oh, you kissed me because you like my forgiveness. He said, Eva, I hate your forgiveness.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, why? He said, because you don't understand. He said, in Jewish tradition, the perpetrator must repent and then ask for forgiveness, and then you forgive. I said, now, just a moment. You think if Hitler, Mengele, Goebbels, Himmler were alive today, would they repent and ask for forgiveness? He said, that's absurd. I said, that is what I saw too. So I said, so what will happen to me? Do I have to remain a victim for the rest of my life because they won't repent? And he didn't answer.
Well, here's
so
something.
That gave me the realization how absurd it is that most victims remain victims voluntarily.
Well,
when all these perpetrators are long gone, because that is the dogma that they have been taught.
Yeah,
I didn't know about the dogma because I was too young to learn it.
Well, these are very good points, Eva. Here's something I'd like to point out for you to maybe to use in the future if you get into such a debate. And any listeners who would say that, for example, it's tradition within the Jewish faith to absolutely insist on an apology or repentance first.
Mm-hmm.
I helped organize the Jerusalem Conference on Forgiveness that we ran on July 12th and 13th of this year. And the 2016 Templeton Prize winner, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, gave a talk. And he's one of the lead rabbis in the Jewish world these days. And he was asked by Peter Pelich in the interview, and Peter, remember, is the education head of the Elijah Interfaith Institute, with whom I'm meeting soon. And she asked him that question, Rabbi Sacks, is it absolutely insistent in Jewish tradition that you have to have an apology or repentance before you forgive? And he said, no, not necessarily. And he gave a very good explanation of that. And his video is on the International Forgiveness Institute website, which is internationalforgiveness.com. And you might want to take a look at that, because his, as a very learned, deeply thought through issue, does not agree that there's a law in Jewish tradition that you cannot forgive unless the other shows some signs of repentance.
Well, the question I would ask then, it sounds like just universally that ego and pride are in the way for a lot of people. I mean, they're putting their own self-awareness and own ego and pride as an obstacle to liberation.
I think the education, the way they've been taught, I have always been a person who was not listening much to tradition, and so I marched to the beat of my own drum. And got me in a lot of trouble and got me out of some trouble.
Well, you do that. You're inspiring, I think, in that respect, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was really one of those just moments of unbelievable inspiration. I said, wow, you mean I have the power? Because if you ask all victims on the face of this earth, do they have any power over their lives? They will say no. That is what it's taken away from you when you become a victim. And they don't really think. That's why I think there are a lot of different actions we could take. A declaration, courses, teaching, in seminars, in places like United Nations, in places like Israel. What you do need with that, a lot more publicity, tweeting or the Facebook or whatever else you can do. You don't need the traditional old-fashioned media to do it. However, we need all forms of media, because even if these good works are being done, they are not getting enough attention.
Good point, Doctor. Am I onto something there with the human qualities of pride and ego as being obstacles?
I think absolutely. When we forgive, we see that the one who hurt us and we, on a certain sense here, are on the same level, and that we both have inherent or built-in worth as persons. We see that we share a common humanity. We see that their power over us is not power unless we give it to them, as Eva so brilliantly has shown during this program. And we need a sprinkling of humility when we forgive. And we grow into that humility, saying, what they've done to me is horrendous, and we can't take that back. As Eva said, we can't go back in time and change that. But what we can change now is our human-to-human humility to what we hope will be received as humility from the other response. But if the other isn't humble, then we don't reconcile. And forgiveness is not the same thing as reconciliation. But my humility can't set me free. If I stay bound to my ego, if I stay bound to requiring of the other a certain response before I set myself free, that's giving the other more power over us, and our ego is fueling that power over us. Humility breaks the power the other has over us when we forgive, and we're good to those who are not good to us.
Well, I don't know if I agree with everything you said, because reconciliation and forgiveness, in my opinion, are very different.
You and I agree with that. Forgiveness and reconciliation are totally different.
Totally different. It takes two people. And what I liked forgiveness, that I didn't need anybody to agree with me, accept it, approve it, or give me the permission.
Yes.
I could do it because I wanted to. And that is exactly what I thought, that most victims lacked in their life, to do something because they felt it was right for them.
Right.
Well, Eva, I can tell you, I've interviewed Dr. Enright many times, and he agrees with you on that point.
Right.
Fair enough, Doctor.
See, that's a big difference that we need through forgiveness education. When you forgive, you might not reconcile. They're not the same thing. As you said, Eva, reconciliation takes two people to come together again in mutual trust. Forgiveness is offering a virtue whenever you want, just like patience, offering kindness, offering justice. You can offer it when you choose to do so. So we agree 100% on that.
Okay, very good.
I want to thank both of you. It's amazing how fast the hour went, and I hope to get you two together. We'll get the information to each of you after we're off the air here. But okay. Eva Kaur, it's amazing. It's always great to talk to you. And, of course, we should say, I don't know if I should. I went to school with your son. That's how I met you in the first place. It's a wonderful situation for me. Anyway, thank you again. And I wish you the best of luck. And certainly, Dr. Enright, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I hope you two can form a partnership going forward and bring peace to the world. How about that for setting the bar high?
It would be all because of you, Mitch. You brought us together.
Yes.
There you go.
And I thought I was worthless, so now I have higher self-esteem because of
your
you
two. Your inherent worth has just been elevated.
Well, you have the power of the media, and I always felt that even with today's internet and all that, the media, radio, television, newspapers, magazines still carry a lot of power. So you realize that and you can help with that.
Thank you so much. I'm finally getting self-esteem at 56. I knew it could happen. Thank you very much being on the show.
Okay. And take it anytime you get it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Take care, Eva and Dr. Enright. And we'll talk again, I hope. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.